You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to take a second to thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neuro-linguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we wouldn't be here without you. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider sharing this episode with one person who might find it helpful and leaving us a review on your favorite podcasting app. We would definitely appreciate it. So today we're talking with Annalee Shepherd. Annalee is the author of Mending the Shattered Mirror, A Journey of Recovery from Abuse and Therapy. She joins us on this episode to recap some of her own story and share the important information on this topic of abuse and therapy and unhealthy relationships in a therapy environment. I also want to add that the vast majority, most in fact as far as I'm concerned, of helping professionals, therapists, psychologists, counselors, are wonderful, amazing, beautiful people who are so needed in this world. And I personally am truly thankful for the therapist that helped me heal so much. Our chat today focuses on the situation that can arise, though, when an unhealthy dynamic becomes apparent in a therapy relationship. During our chat, you'll hear Annalee share the events that led her to seek help of a therapist and what happened during the subsequent years that turned so toxic and why she stayed for as long as she did. She shares the signs to look for if you suspect there is an unhealthy dynamic with your helping professional, what you can do, and how you can approach this topic with them. We talk about the need for professional boundaries in a therapeutic environment and how if those boundaries are not set or enforced, it's not the fault of the patient. We talk about the longing that patients can have for a deeper relationship with their therapist, how we can work through the shame and blame that comes with healing, and what it means to not have an equal relationship between therapist and patient. All this and much more during our chat with Annalee Shepherd, starting right now. So, hey, Annalee, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. It's so cool to talk to you again. How are you?
Hi, Matt. Thank you. I'm doing great, and it's wonderful to be back, actually. So, everything's good.
Awesome. Well, that's great to hear. I'm glad that we were able to get everything squared away with the schedules to bring you back on the show. So, for those that don't remember, you were on the podcast over a year ago talking about your book and your experiences with abuse and therapy and some ways that we can recognize that. And so I wanted to start out by kind of recapping your story a little bit, share as much as you like, and then we'll dive into how can we recognize if we're in a unsafe therapy relationship, what does that mean? Why does it happen? Ways that we can, you know, advocate for ourselves and all that good stuff. But before we get into all of that, if you want to take a second and say hello and introduce yourself, that would be great.
Yeah. Thank you. So I am Annalee Shepherd, and I'm the author of the book Mending the Shattered Mirror, which does chronicle my experience of being in an abusive therapy relationship. But I'm also a mom of four wonderful children. I've been married to my husband for 40 years. I have five of the most precious grandbabies imaginable. I'm an artist, an actress. I'm involved in music, so I have a very full, rich life. And I have given up a lot of what I have done for years. I led a performing arts program for children for 30 years, and I'm really dedicating myself to promoting my message, the message of my book, and turning what happened to me into something that can be positive in this world, rather than just have letting it destroy me, which there was a point where I thought it was going to, but it hasn't. And I'm living a very full, rich, happy life at this point.
Yeah, why don't we talk about that for a little bit here? And for those who didn't catch the first episode, which I will link in the show notes along with your book and your website so they can check out all of the things you're involved in. But why don't we start out a little bit? You can kind of recap your story and some of the experiences that happened to you and the reason you wrote the book, and then we'll dive into some of the other topics.
Okay. So after being married for many years and having a beautiful family and feeling that life was very good, one day I found out that one of my daughters had been the victim of a crime. And I was very, very shattered by finding this information out. And for the first time in my life, I sought out the help of a therapist. I ended up seeing this woman. She was a licensed psychologist. I saw her for 5 years. And the relationship was extremely abusive, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, physically. And I think it would be hard for people to understand why I saw her for 5 years if it was abusive. But for 4 of those years, I totally did not understand that I was being abused. I thought that I had found the most loving, wonderful therapist in the world. She knew of the trauma from my childhood of losing my mother, not to death, but I lost her emotionally. And she proceeded to try to insert herself as my mother. And in many, many ways took over, I would say, my inner being. She became my everything. I actually, and it's very hard for me to admit this, but I stopped being there for my family. I actually stopped being there for myself. I became only a reflection of her. She was overtly loving, giving me presents. We talked daily on the phone. She was way too affectionate with me. And for 4 years, this went on, and I just felt so loved and cared for. It was like a miracle in my life. And then she did something that just deep down, I thought, no, this isn't right. It was something she said. And I questioned her for the first time in 4 years. And she told me that she was putting a boundary around what she had said that was actually, I know now, it was a very awful thing for her to say to me. And she told me that I couldn't ask her about it and we couldn't talk about it. And for the first time, I didn't play the good little girl. And I insisted that I needed to talk about it. I was very kind and loving in insisting, but I wouldn't let go. And she then became as cruel and abusive as she had been loving for the first 4 years. I stayed for a year during this overtly cruel time in my relationship with her. She eventually actually hit me. It got to that point. I couldn't leave because, and people ask me this, why didn't you just leave when you found out you were being abused? But because she had inserted herself so deeply in my life and my heart, I didn't think I could survive intact emotionally or psychologically if I left her. I felt like I had to get her love back. And during that year, I became more and more broken, I guess, as a person, until I finally got the support from an online support group, TELL, T-E-L-L, which stands for Therapy Exploitation Link Line. I connected with a volunteer responder there, and she gave me the courage and the strength to finally walk away from this relationship and start a journey of healing.
I'm sure there are some who are wondering, as you said, why would you stay for so long? But I think one of the things that you mentioned, when you seek out the help of a therapist, we almost automatically assume that it's going to be safe, right? I mean, you know, they're a safe person, they're trained, they're there to help us. And so we don't always see what's unfolding right in front of us because we're so deeply involved in the healing, and especially if we have like zero frame of reference, like we've never worked with a therapist before, we might often think that, hey, this is the way it's supposed to be. And so I think that when somebody is working with a therapist, and also we should also stress that obviously like the vast majority of therapists are amazing and safe and wonderful people. And, you know, but obviously there are some, of course, in your case that things went sideways over a period of time. And so how can we know if we are in this kind of relationship? Like maybe we suspect something's a little off or we're not really comfortable. Like, are there warning signs or things we can look out for or ways that we can maybe research to see if we are in this kind of therapeutic relationship?
Well, there's a couple things that you said that I want to comment on. I think that the vast majority of people that go into therapy really do not have any idea of what they're getting into. I find it interesting that a therapist has years and years of training in order to know how to be in this, what I would call a very unnatural relationship, actually, certainly an unequal relationship. But we, the patient, especially the first time in therapy, we come into therapy without any knowledge of how it works, without any understanding of what this is going to, how this is going to affect us emotionally, what the relationship is supposed to look like, what is appropriate and what is not. We don't know as a patient. And normally, the therapeutic relationship takes place in privacy. There's not anybody else there, which can be very dangerous for the patient if you have a therapist who does not respect boundaries. And you made the point that most therapists are good people, good professionals, caring, and all of that. And I do believe that is true. I actually believe that my abusive therapist is a very, very good person. I think if you met her, I think if anybody met her, they would find her to be wonderful. She didn't set out to hurt me. The problem is if a therapist doesn't understand, even the best of therapists with the best of intentions, if they don't understand the importance of boundaries to protect the patient, then the therapy can become very problematic and abusive. I mean, it's not a, they don't mean to be abusive, but it can become an abusive situation. So I think it is, and my goal is, I think it is very important to educate patients as to what is appropriate and what is not. I also am hoping as I promote my book and tell my story, I am hoping that therapists will listen to me so that they can see the therapeutic relationship through the eyes of the patient. One of the interesting things that I find is in speaking, and I do now, I'm invited to speak at conferences and have spoken a number of times to therapists, but they, if you think about the relationship, a patient has one therapist, and that therapist becomes for them almost a lifeline. If there's any kind of trauma or, well, I think just about for anybody, if they decide to go see a therapist, they're looking for help and they're looking for something stronger than they are to hold on to for a little while. For the therapist, they usually have many, many patients. So this relationship between the two of them is so unequal. And the importance of the relationship to the patient is has much greater consequences than it does for the therapist. So things that within the relationship, if the therapist is not cognizant of where the patient is coming from and the vulnerability of the patient, even a very good therapist can do things that are psychologically dangerous for the patient. I'll tell you something interesting, Matt. I am actually I've gone back to school to get my degree in psychology. And I'm a little bit shocked by the lack of classes offered that teach ethics. I'm sure it'll be covered. But I think a lot of therapists learn the what and the how of ethics, but they don't learn the why. And my story, I'm trying to get the why out there. So you asked me, how do we tell? That's actually a difficult question because how do we tell? Yeah, I should rephrase that. How do we tell if we are in an abusive or a potentially abusive or in a potentially unhealthy therapeutic relationship? The problem is it takes so many different forms. Now that I have talked to many, many people, I understand that there are so many ways in which a relationship with the therapist can go south, if you will. But I think there are some telltale things. I think, number one, therapy is never about the therapist or the therapist's feelings, the therapist's story, the therapist's life. And if that starts being brought into in any way into the therapeutic relationship, then it no longer, there's not enough room in that space for the patient's story and the patient's life and the patient's feeling. There has to be complete room for the patient. There's also, if in any way the relationship becomes a friendship rather than a therapist-patient relationship, that's very dangerous for the patient. There becomes an expectation on the patient's part that can never be fulfilled or shouldn't ever be fulfilled. The relationship is there for the patient to talk about whatever is going on in their life, whatever brings them into therapy. And if that relationship becomes about a friendship, it's you can't have both. You have to keep the boundary of what is safe therapy, which is a focus completely on the patient, intact at all times. There are some very obvious things, obvious to me at least. There should be no gift giving. I believe there should be no physical affection, hugs or anything else between the patient and the therapist. There should be a limitation as far as there's a set time for the appointment. If you find that your therapist is taking your appointment later, longer, like you have an hour reserved and it goes into an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes, that's a boundary violation. And the main problem with all of this is that the patient doesn't understand the relationship. And if those boundaries are not securely there, the patient starts making up stories about what things mean. For instance, if the therapist takes their patient their time 15 minutes late, the patient starts feeling, I must be very special to this therapist. She must really care about me. And it's a nonverbal communication. Yet they are free to make up, the patient, to make up their own story about why things are happening. Whereas if there's strong, secure boundaries, the patient knows, understands the relationship at least a little bit, all that we can. So those are some of the things just off the top of my head that in encountering and talking to different people, things that I have, and certainly within my own relationship with this abusive therapist, these things that consistently happened that should have been a red flag, but I had no idea.
Everything you're saying is just, it's so interesting. And I think one of the points you made a few minutes ago, when you enter therapy, you as the patient, as the client, especially as you said, like, you know, being a first timer, you have no idea what to expect other than maybe what you've seen on TV where there's like a couch and you sit there and, you know, maybe you expect to go in and lay on a couch and tell your story. But like, you know, so you go in with either no knowledge whatsoever or some kind of, you know, maybe limited preconceived of what somebody told you or what you saw. And so you are obviously at the mercy of the therapist to, you know, to treat you in a way that is professional and ethical and everything that you're saying. And I know when I first started therapy, it was very odd. Now, I think overall I took to it pretty naturally, but I still had no idea what to expect. You know, I didn't know exactly how I was going to share or, you know, what kinds of things she was going to ask or, you know, what kind of work, you know, workbooks we were going to do or whatever. So I kind of had to learn along the way. And fortunately, my therapist was amazing in that I have zero reason to ever think she was ever, you know, unsafe or anything. I mean, but I think something else that is interesting, and maybe you can comment on this, as a client, especially when we're talking about, you know, trauma survivors in particular, when you start to work with a therapist and, you know, after some amount of time, you start to feel safe and you develop a rapport and you're starting to get things out of your head and work through all the memories and all that, I think it's important that we as patients not shame ourselves for almost wanting more out of a therapist. And I'll give you an example. When I started really diving deep into my trauma and, you know, I would sit there on a couch and just hold pillows and be like, oh my God, this sucks. This is terrible. And oftentimes I would long for just like somebody to come sit beside me, you know, hold my hand or put my arm around me or tell me it's going to be okay or give me a hug. And I think I wanted that because it's what I thought I needed to feel safe. But in retrospect, it probably would not have been the most safe, ethical thing to do. And of course, she never did that. I don't know that I ever asked her, but even if I would have, she never crossed that line. She always sat in her chair and we did our thing. But I think maybe it's important too, if you can address that, we almost kind of want that subconsciously or otherwise to maybe feel, you know, just to feel heard and validated, but it's up to the therapist to keep that line drawn and to make us feel safe in other ways. Like, does that make sense at all?
It makes absolute sense. I validate every word you just said. It is completely natural for the patient to long for a deeper connection with their therapist. Honestly, it's completely natural for the therapist to feel that too. The therapist just can't act on it. But yes, we are human. And if I was sitting with a friend and telling them a terrible story from my life and probably crying, it would be the most natural thing in the world for them to reach out and touch me or hug me. The problem with a therapist doing that is it communicates something that isn't real because they're not a friend. And it takes the relationship beyond verbal communication. And again, I touched on that earlier. Then the patient starts to make up stories. Well, that's not good for anybody. If I think I may have actually given this same example the last time I spoke to you, but I don't remember. I'm going to give it again. If in the world I meet a friend for lunch and we give each other a quick hug, we know exactly what it means because we're equals. If my daughter comes home from not seeing her for a long time and I give her a great big old hug, it's, hey, I love you to death. I missed you. I'm so glad you're here. And same thing from her to me. We know what it means. It's an equal relationship. With a therapist, it is not an equal relationship. And I touched a little bit on why that is. But there's lots of reasons why it's not equal. The patient is needy. The therapist, hopefully within this relationship, within this space of therapy, is not needy. It's not an equal relationship. And if there is a hug, all of a sudden the patient is left to make up in their own mind, what does it mean? The other thing that can happen is, let's say you were sitting on the couch and your therapist did come over and embrace you, just a very human, warm, natural feeling, expression of her feelings, of compassion for you as a hurting person. It would seem very natural, but what if the next time you felt that much emotional turmoil, but she didn't interpret it the same and she didn't embrace you? Is it, can it be seen as a rejection? Can it become something hurtful? And I would say absolutely yes, having not only lived through it myself, but talked to so many other people. So to get back to your point, to not shame ourselves, amen. We are allowed to feel anything we want to feel, anything we do feel. There are no limitations. There's not any limitations on the therapist feeling what they want to feel either. They just can't act on it. It would have been fine if you had asked your therapist for a hug. It wouldn't have been fine if she gave you one. Her job at that point would have been to bring your need, your perceived need in that moment for a hug, into a verbal conversation. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about how you're feeling. Let's talk about how a hug would help you. Once you bring something into the room as the patient, it's there and it needs to be talked about. So no shame for anything we feel. And to be bold, it's very natural for a patient to have sexual fantasies about their therapist. But again, it's the therapist's job to make sure that that space and the conversation and the interactions remain safely within the boundary of therapist and client patient. And those boundaries are, the therapist knows them. The problem is some therapists don't, they think that they, well, my therapist, I'll take it to my therapist. She thought she was stronger than the boundaries. She thought that she knew better. I believe truly that when she took our relationship into spaces where it never should have been, and there was a lot of hugging, I would go so far as to say a lot of caressing. It was never sexual, but very intimate and very, oh my goodness, it brought me to a place that there, it was definitely beyond my ability to understand. But she didn't do this out of any wish to harm me. It was unethical. And as a professional, that's not okay. Most therapists, I believe, who cross boundaries in the beginning do it because they think that they can handle it. And I've had actually therapists say to me, I trust myself enough to know that I can handle physical contact within therapy. I understand how to use it and deal with it within therapy. And my response is, perhaps you do. I'll believe you. But you have no idea if your patient can handle it. And that's the important thing. And there's a respect for the patient and for the patient's emotional well-being that goes above and beyond what the therapist's ego, if you will, about what they can or cannot do or what they can or cannot handle. Because the patient is a separate person with a separate life story and their own emotional weaknesses, their baggage, their whatever, that they bring into therapy. And there is a respect that the therapist has to have for the space that the patient needs to occupy within therapy. And I'll give you just a quick example with my therapist. So at 3 years old, my mother was removed from me and there was no more physical contact. So for me, the physical contact from this woman within therapy who had become a mother figure was overwhelming. It was something I did not know how to deal with. And when the relationship became abusive in being cruel, because it was abusive all along, the wound to my spirit was so deep, so much deeper, because there had been so much physical contact, which had emulated contact that I had longed for my whole life from my mother since I was three. I carried that with me, the abrupt ending of that physical love that I had had from my mother. So my therapist, in her arrogance and in her ignorance, doubly wounded me in breaking ethical boundaries, because she thought she was, if you will, above the law and could bring me and could heal me. She could not heal me. Only I can heal me. Only the patient has the power to understand themselves and to do the hard work of recovery from trauma or understanding their own life circumstances. And if the therapist is anything but a solid, steady presence that gives the patient the safe space to do the hard work of therapy, then they are intruding into the patient's story and into the patient's work, and they don't belong there.
There's one other thing I want to get to yet, in terms of, you know, when we get to a point where, if we are in an abusive relationship, realizing that it's not our fault. But I want to double back real quick on something the affection between a patient and the therapist, and, you know, hugs and, you know, that kind of stuff, which would obviously be seemingly innocent and kind and compassionate on the patient side. And something that you said when you were talking kind of brought back a memory of when I left the therapy relationship. You know, it was a mutual parting of ways because she was moving offices and, you know, all kinds of stuff. The therapy relationship ended on good terms, but the very last session, like, we were done, I was down checking out, I said goodbye to her. I asked her, you know, I said, you know, hey, thanks for everything, I appreciate it, blah, blah, blah. Can I give you a quick hug? And she said, sure. And that was the only time she ever hugged me that I can recall. But it was, being that I was a survivor, and even though I had done lots of healing, I still had feelings of abandonment because the hug wasn't what I thought it should be, right? Like, for her, it was just a real quick, innocent hug, literally lasted maybe a second or two at the very, very most, like just kind of one of those like quick kind of nonchalant hugs you give people. I was looking for more of a thanks for everything kind of really embrace or something, and I didn't get it. So I had to deal with those feelings of abandonment, not because she intentionally did anything wrong, but because I was expecting it to be more than what it was. And of course, on her part, it was good of her to keep that boundary up. But at the same time, being a survivor and going, you know, dealing with abandonment as it is, I felt really kind of slighted, or I guess abandoned, by the fact that the hug wasn't what I thought it would be. And that end kind of circles back to what you were talking about, of the hug being something different for the patient versus the therapist.
I actually love your story. It, as sad as that kind of is, sounds like you almost needed a little bit of therapy to try to understand what had happened with that hug.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, I'm going to ask you a question. How would it have been for you if your therapist had said, boy, I really appreciate your gratitude to me, but how about you express it to me? I think it'd be safer than a hug, and had allowed you to say the things that you wanted that hug to represent. If she had prompted you to do that, do you think it would have been satisfying?
That's interesting. I think in the moment it would have probably caught, and I'm just shooting from the hip here from my own thoughts. I think in the moment, It would have definitely caught me off guard, because, you know, to me it was just, hey, you know, let's give a hug and you know, part ways, and that's the end of it. I guess if she had brought it up and you know, given me a few extra minutes to express what the hug intended, I think I would have been okay with it, but I think I would have wanted her to explain why I couldn't just have a hug. Like, you know, I think, and I'm just basically saying how I would deal with this, I would imagine I would be okay with, you know, sharing in words what it meant to me, but I would also probably want her to express the reason why the hug is not appropriate because of a therapeutic relationship. I think if she would say that and explain it in a way that was understandable, I'd probably be cool with it. But if she just said, well, rather than that, how about if you just tell me how you feel? I probably would have been a little bit offended. I mean, not that I would be angry, but I maybe hurt. Hurt is probably a better word.
Yeah, what you just described would be the perfect, I think, not that I'm an authority other than I've lived the story, but for her to say, this is why, let's talk about this. And even if she had, this is why I can't let you hug me. This is why I think I shouldn't do that. Or why I shouldn't hug you, would maybe be more important. But she would take it out of the realm of the nonverbal and say, this is why. And this, I respect you. I care about you as my patient. And I think this could be something that could be problematic. And of course she would have been right. And I think had that same scenario happened at the end of a session that was very, very worthwhile, and you had gained a lot, and you said, I'd just like to give you a hug. And then you would have those feelings of abandonment because, which I totally get, by the way, because the hug wasn't everything you anticipated that it would be. When you came back the next the session and the two of you had talked about it, it could have become a very growing moment for you to understand that, yes, I have these abandonment issues. Yes, I set up expectations, whatever it is. But then again, we're bringing it back into the verbal, which is where true communication happens. between therapist and patient. There are certainly relationships in this world where physical contact is a very important part of the expression, for instance, between a mother and child. But at the same time, your story so illustrates what the problem is. And it's really actually a very poignant story for me to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it was just interesting when you were talking. I'm like, yeah, I mean, honestly, I can still remember that. And it's been several years since that occurred. But it's still in my mind like yesterday. Like, I can tell you the time of day, the office, where it was. Like, that memory sticks out of my mind as one of the primary memories of all the therapy sessions we did. And it was the very last one. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, yes, had she said, I respect you, you know, blah, 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 and given me, you know, broken it down in a way that assured me that she was not refusing the hug out of any intent other than, you know, professionalism and compassion, but rather, you know, giving me an alternative way to do it, I would have most likely have been totally cool with it. And, you know, I could have said my piece and that would have been the end of it. So I think that's a great point, is it's not simply just refusing the hug or giving a half-hearted one, but saying, giving the patient the opportunity to express themselves in a different way and tell them why, to put their feelings at ease and to help ease the feelings of abandonment and whatnot. So I think it's a great point. It really, really is.
I have an interesting incident from the aftermath of my abuse with this therapist. During the time I was seeing her, she would hold me often. And I will tell you that when the holding, and I would call it caressing, took place, communication became way too intimate. The things I would say, it brought me into a place that I wasn't really communicating anymore. I was just feeling. But she gave me a blanket to wrap around myself and feel her love when I wasn't with her. And after I finally was able to leave, and I went 2 years of recovery, which did take years, and the writing of my book and telling my story, that blanket all that time sat in my room, and I would look at it, and there were times, I have to admit, I would wrap it around myself and just cry for everything I had lost, or I felt I had lost. Well, a couple of years ago, I actually sent that blanket to the dump, and it was such a telling moment in my life when I was able to understand in a broader sense what had happened to me and the value of all that caressing and loving, that it was trash. It was nothing. And it was bad for me. And sending that blanket, I think of it now sometimes, and actually it can bring me to tears, to be perfectly honest, because this was a huge part of my life. It was 5 years that I thought were wonderful. I felt loved. And I lost it. I grieved it for years. But I take a certain amount of pride in the fact that that blanket is now somewhere in the in the trash heap where it belongs.
Wow. Yeah. That had to be just an incredibly emotional experience. I mean, like freeing and sadness and exhilaration and I mean, just everything. I can't imagine the range of emotions you felt when that happened, and however long it took you to get to that point really doesn't matter. The fact is that you did enough healing. You have enough awareness to realize that that blanket, you know, symbolized something that, you know, was part of your life that you no longer want to, lives with so much every day. And so you're able to kind of cut the cord with it, cut the ties with it, throw it in the trash and never have to deal with it again. And one other thing too, for those who maybe are in this relationship with a therapist that's unhealthy, how do we make sure that we don't put that blame on ourselves or deal with it when we do? Because we know, especially as survivors of trauma, we often put the blame squarely where we think it's supposed to be, and which is us, which is obviously not the case, but it's something we can control, and therefore that's what we do. But if you have some insight on really trying to work through the realization that it's not you that failed, that it would be the helping professional that crossed lines and boundaries that should not have been crossed.
Yeah, we touched before on the fact that it is absolutely normal and natural for a patient to idolize their therapist, to love them, and to want to be loved in return, and to want more and more and more. That's natural. So if a relationship does go bad, if the therapist does become too involved, too loving, And that can never be sustained. So it's going to ultimately become abusive in other ways too. And of course, there's always sexual abuse too, which we, I think, all recognize that that's terribly abusive thing to happen. But because of our emotional life within the therapeutic relationship and our longing, and maybe even our manipulation at times to get what we think we want, there is absolutely a tendency to blame ourselves. I wanted her. Well, I'll take my own situation. I wanted her love. I began to depend on her love. I told her I loved her all the time. I know now that I would do things to try to prove her love to me because I needed it. It was not my job to in any way limit myself within therapy. It was her job to have boundaries, to understand that, and that this was natural for me, that it is natural within a human relationship and where one person is giving of themselves and the other person is taking, and that's the therapist giving, the patient taking, that it's going to emotionally affect the patient. But how does a patient then who has gone through this let go of the shame? You know, that's, to be honest with you, it's like saying, how does somebody who loses a child get rid of the grief? Because I think that shame is part of the healing process. And I think without it, you maybe never come to terms with the reality of what happened. And I think that only through knowledge and through other people who hopefully a good therapist, that somebody who has been abused can then develop a relationship with that will help them understand that it's not their fault. I don't think that a person who has been abused has the ability to let go of the shame until they have knowledge. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it is part of the road of recovery, unfortunately. And I think being able to let go of the shame and the guilt and the feeling that this was somehow my fault, it brings you to a place, a deeper understanding. I am a wiser person today. I am not naive as I was to human relationships, as I was before this abusive therapy. So I would say to anybody who is in this situation, it is not your fault. None of it's your fault. Absolutely 0%. If there is sexual abuse within therapy and the patient tried their hardest to seduce the therapist, it is still not their fault in any way, shape, or form. It's like saying that if you go into to see a doctor and you have a very aggressive cancer that the doctor has to work really, 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 really hard to bring you back to a place of health, that it's somehow your fault because your cancer was so bad. No, you're the patient, and whatever you present, whatever your failings, whatever your weaknesses, whatever your manipulation, your anger, whatever it is that you bring into therapy, that's okay. It is never, ever your fault. If you don't pay your bill and you don't show up for your appointment, those are the only two things that could possibly be your fault in therapy.
Annalee, this has been incredible. Your insight is so validating. I mean, I learned a ton the last time we talked. I've learned a lot more this time. And honestly, just working through the thoughts in my head as you've been talking and we've been doing this recording for the last 45 minutes or so, just reliving those thoughts. And I gained some new insight on myself. It gave me a new perspective that I think was just kind of good to be reminded of, is, you know, because the feelings of abandonment were so strong, and coming out of that relationship, I was very vulnerable. And I still, you know, I mean, to this day, I consider, you know, that experience in therapy to be amazing, but there are still some parts of it that are hard to live with. And so I think by us chatting today, that helped me, and hopefully it's going to help a lot of people too, who are in a relationship with a therapist, and maybe they're not sure if it's unhealthy. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but the stuff that you shared in terms of what to look for and, you know, the ethical boundaries and everything that we've shared, I think is going to help people to be able to make that determination and then decide for themselves if it's something they need to pursue in terms of, you know, ending that relationship or talking with their professional to make sure that it doesn't continue. So everything you've shared has been amazing. Please let us know where we can find your book, if you have any speaking engagements coming up, all that good stuff.
Well, my book is on Amazon.com and it's also on Barnes & Noble, the website. The name again is Mending the Shattered Mirror, A Journey of Recovery from Abusive Therapy. And it's by Amelie Shepherd. And I had such a hard time picking out the title because my story is about the abuse, but it's more about my recovery. It's a very triumphant book, very life affirming. It's more about relationships. There's the relationship between me and this woman, this volunteer responder. It's based on our emails actually over 4 years, and the relationship is a beautiful thing and what happens in our relationship. So I would encourage people that the book itself is not a downer. It's kind of hard to read some of the things that happened, but I try to give an inspirational message of how to become your own best self, if you will. And so again, it's Mending the Shattered Mirror. And I titled it that because you can't ever really mend a shattered mirror. It will carry forever the scars, the cracks, the whatever. And that is true of, I think, any abuse survivor. But what I hope to, and also of the fact that it's mending is an ongoing process, and it is an ongoing process the rest of my life, to deal with what happened to me and to understand it at deeper levels. And things happen all the time that bring me to a deeper understanding of myself. So the title of the book, Mending the Shattered Mirror, is a reflection of the fact that the book is meant to be a journey of hope, a journey of victory, a journey of love, if you will, loving myself. And I would be honored if people chose to read it.
Incredible. Thanks so much, Annalie, for joining me. You always have an open invitation to come back on the show.
Thank you, Matt. And thank you. I love doing your show because you ask such thought-provoking questions. And I love the work that you do. I honor it. I respect it. And I thank you once again for including me and my story. I'm quite honored and flattered. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free 1-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.